everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League for BleacherReport.com, Sports on Earth, The Sports Daily, and Scout.com. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian.
You.
Week one of the 2015 NFL season is in the books. There's a lot to talk about in terms of the outcomes of week one's games. But let's start, of course, how we start pretty much every week now at this part of the year with injuries, because they are an inevitable byproduct of this sport. There are a number of key injuries, but maybe none so key as the broken foot suffered by Dallas Cowboys wide receiver Dez Bryant. The initial reports is that he's expected to be out 6 to 8 weeks, but given the nature of the injury and the surgery that he underwent, it might be more than 8 weeks. The Cowboys have traded for Oakland wide receiver Bryce Butler to round out their receiving core, but obviously guys like Terrence Williams, Cole Beasley, and tight end Jason Witten are going to have to be bigger parts of that Cowboys passing offense than they already were. It's a huge loss.
It is.
I mean, it's Dez Bryant. He's one of the premier receivers in the NFL. Just got his long-term contract extension, got that all worked out in the offseason. And he's often been considered, you know, the attitude, the heart and soul of this Cowboys team, not just the offense, but the entire team. The attitude that he kind of brings onto the field, that competitive fire, that's going to be something that those intangibles are also going to be something that they're going to miss.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, he's kind of one of the leaders on the offense. I mean, it's not like it's Tony Romo necessarily, where, you know, that would be devastating for the whole offense.
But correct.
That just reduces a lot of the dynamic abilities of the Cowboy offense and for however long. I mean, I think that's the big question that's obviously less that's left to be answered, is exactly how long is he going to be out? Because if it is 8 weeks, then that certainly puts a hamper on the beginning of their season.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's half a season right there.
But if they can skate through and then they get him back, they can make a push to the playoffs, you know, that sort of thing. So, but if it gets in, if it's, you know, longer than that, at, you know, by a couple, 3 months, that's kind of at the edge there, because you get much longer than that and you're going to be really scrambling once it comes to, you know, if he's coming back in like December and they're really, the backs were really up against the wall to get into the playoffs at that point. So,
well, plus, you know, it's you're talking about a broken foot. You're talking a fractured foot on a wide receiver that's being surgically repaired. So even if he is able to come back in 6 weeks or 8 weeks or even 10 weeks, you know, what is his physical condition going to be? How is he going to, you know, be able to move around on that foot being so closely removed from the surgery? So that's something to think about, too, is that, you know, when he comes back, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be seeing 100% healthy, 100% effective Dez Bryant.
That's a very, very good point. Especially with something that's – what this is his foot, you said, right?
Yes, he broke his foot.
Yeah, something like that is – it should heal – I mean – typically, bone breaks are the type of thing where, you know, there's a specific period of time. It gets healed and guys
are
fine.
But he's got a pin in that foot now, too, which is another thing to think about, because mm-hmm. those pins can move around.
Well, what I was going to say is that the breaks in your feet are a different thing than if you break, like, your arm or something like that, just because there's so many small, tiny little bones and, you know, they can be a lot more complicated. So, we'll have to see exactly how bad this is for them this season, when they get him back, and what their situation looks like at that point. But it's certainly very significant, especially after the first game.
Another serious injury suffered, this time on defense. Baltimore Ravens outside linebacker.
That's where I thought you were going first, but just because it's the whole year. But
pass rusher extraordinaire Terrell Suggs tore his left Achilles tendon. If you'll recall, he also tore his right Achilles tendon back in 2012. So this is his second Achilles tear in his career. He's 33 years old, and he said during the offseason that he's on the back nine of his career. Retirement seems to be in the cards for Terrell Suggs sooner rather than later. I don't know if this injury is going to be the kind of thing that makes him motivated to come back and play one more year in 2016, or if this is just going to, you know,
well, it could be the opposite.
Or it could be opposite and just mark the end of his NFL career and his Ravens career. He's the Ravens' all-time leading sack leader with 106.5 sacks in his career. Had 12 last year in a bounce-back year working alongside Elvis Dumervil. So now, of course, the Ravens are going to need Dumervil to step up. They're going to need Courtney Upshaw to step up. They're going to need fourth-round rookie draft pick Za'Darius Smith to step up. They did bring in Babin, our good friend Babin, as a free agent signing this week. But, you know, Babin's what? He's 35 years old. He's older than Suggs. Started only a couple of games for the New York Jets last year. Had 2 sacks. He's more of a veteran backup.
I would say so, yeah.
At this point. He's not going to be – he might be rotated in.
It's been a couple years since he's been any sort of impact on the field,
exactly.
I'd say.
I mean, he'll be rotated in, I think, I would assume at times, especially when you're talking about a guy like Za'Darius Smith, who is a rookie. But at the same time, you know, we talked about the intangibles, you know, the loss of Dez Bryant's intangibles on the field for however long for the Cowboys. Same thing for Terrell Suggs. A leader on that team, a leader on that defense, a leader on the field. He's the kind of guy you have to game plan around. He's a scary dude. You know, he might be 33 years old, but, you know, he had 12 sacks last year, which is, you know.
No, he's, yeah. That's the thing.
He knows how to get home no matter what.
It's different where, you know, just last year we saw a very good production out of him. And,
right.
And he was obviously one of the, we'll say, spiritual leaders on the, not that he's like running mass or anything.
He's Ray Lewis pretending to run mass
did. But certainly a leader on that team to get those guys.
And a guy you have to offensively game plan against.
Absolutely.
You know, Courtney Upshaw has shown improvement every year that he's been with Baltimore. This is a contract year for him, so this is a good chance for him to prove something. But nobody's saying, oh, let's game plan around Courtney Upshaw, or let's game plan around Za'Darius Smith. I mean, you still got to game plan around a guy like Elvis Dumervil, because Dumervil will get you.
Mm-hmm.
But it brings down it hurts Dumerville's ability to be productive without Terrell Suggs on that field, because you know, you're committing so many offensive resources to keeping Terrell Suggs away from your quarterback that it gives opportunities to guys like Dumervil or Courtney Upshaw. So that's a major loss. I mean, this is a very talented defense, as we saw how the Ravens handled the Broncos, even though they did not come out with that win on Sunday. Still a very good defense, great defensive line.
You could tell that was two good defenses.
You could tell those were two good defenses going up against one another. They have a very strong defensive line. Now that they're not dealing with all of the injuries in the secondary like they did last year, they have a lot better pass defense on the back end as well. So there's a lot to still like about the Ravens defense. This doesn't sink them, but it is a major loss. You're talking about a major leader for this team, and sort of like Dez Bryant, it's going to change the tone of how that defense looks, like how it changes the tone of how Cowboys offense will look. But this time it's for the entire season, and potentially this could be Terrell Suggs having to call it a career.
Yeah, we'll just have to see. I mean, that's going to be coming off the second Achilles, and he'll be 34,
you know,
by the time he's next available. So, we'll have to see. Oh, hopefully not for Baltimore fans and fans of Terrell Suggs, certainly. But and it's always tough to see a guy who, you know he's still productive, who might end his career just because of some injury. You know, that's
right.
The worst part about
injuries.
You don't
want a career-ending injury. You want a player to be able to go out on his own terms.
Exactly.
So it'll be curious to see if he is the kind of guy who says, okay, that's not how this ends, one more year, or it's just, you know, I'm 33 years old, this is my second Achilles.
Right.
You know, maybe time to stop. Another thing worth noting, not injury-related, not even on the field-related at this point, the latest in the deflated football saga, Jim McNally and John Jastrzemski, the two guys.
The deflators.
The alleged deflators have been reinstated. They are allowed to rejoin the Patriots as employees. The NFL has approved it. The Patriots want it. They just can't touch any footballs. They're prevented from touching any footballs lest they magically deflate.
I can sleep now, so that's great.
Yes, I can sleep now. So let's turn our attention to week one and some reactions to some of the things that we saw. Right off the bat, because this is also relevant news to this week, who'd have thunk we'd see Brian Hoyer be pulled and benched as the Cowboys quarterback so soon? Bill O'Brien, the head coach of the Houston Texans, has said you know, this is the kind of thing where we don't really want to have to pull a quarterback before, let's say, week eight. We want to give Hoyer, who was named their starter, time before they overreact. Yet they pulled him in the game against the Chiefs. The Houston Texans ended up losing 27-10. It was a much worse situation before they put Ryan Mallett in. And now Ryan Mallett is going to be the one to start in week two, confirmed today being Wednesday. Does that surprise you? I mean, I cover the Browns. I saw Brian Hoyer all last year. He started out really strong for the Browns. And then things kind of went wonky with the offensive line. His passes just kept getting more and more inaccurate as the season wore on. The return of Josh Gordon didn't do him any favors, and he ended up getting benched later in the year for Johnny Manziel. And when I saw that he was in this competition with Ryan Mallett for the starting job, you know, part of me wants to root for Brian Hoyer, but part of me knows who Brian Hoyer is.
Or what he is, yeah.
And what he is. And if he's needed to protect the football and limit mistakes, he can do that, but only to a point. And so I thought that was kind of interesting that Bill O'Brien was so committed to Hoyer, you know, wanting to keep him out there for at least half the season as the starter, knowing what we know. When we talk about what Brian Hoyer is, who he is as a quarterback. So are you surprised that this quarterback change has happened so quickly for the Texans?
Yes and no. I mean, I'd say yes from the standpoint of, you know, this this was, you know, Bill O'Brien's guy. He brought him in. He knew him in New England, and he brought him into this situation.
Well, the same can be said for Ryan Mallett, too.
Right. No, he knew them both, obviously, but I believe Mallett was around in Texas in Houston last year, correct?
Correct.
So, like, this is he knew what he had with Mallett then. He knew what he had with Mallett last year.
Right.
And so this offseason, what's he do? He goes and gets Brian Hoyer because he wants Brian Hoyer. And throughout the camp, you could tell they were kind of neck and neck, but he was going Hoyer.
They weren't even kind of neck and neck. They were neck and neck.
Yeah, and but he still wanted to go with Hoyer. Like,
right.
Hoyer was his guy. And that's why it seems surprising. After watching last Sunday's game and after watching a lot of the Browns' season last year, I'm not surprised just because, if you recall, even in the first half of the season last year when the Browns got to that 6-and-whatever start or 6-and-2, 7-4, however it went exactly.
7-and-4.
I think they're at 6-and-2 or something. But regardless, they started off with the good first half of the season, and he was a big part of that. But if you remember, there was a lot of games that was like it was three quarters before he would look like garbage until the fourth quarter.
Right.
And so like there was three quarters of tape of him looking like garbage.
But everybody's very excited because
and then they pulled together.
Figured out how to finish
yeah,
or
exactly,
something.
Exactly. And he seemed like maybe he was clutch and all that kind of stuff and so maybe there's something there. But then like by the end of the season it was like he couldn't even pull it together at the end of the games. It was, you know, madness from beginning to
right,
end.
Right, and the Browns ended up losing the last five games straight, not for a small part because of Brian Hoyer kind of messing
true.
Up
true, and I think there was also pressure from the front office there to put Johnny in and just, you know, what do you got, see what
sure.
you have, get the fans happy, blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah, blah. Especially because the fans were certainly, you know, ready for Hoyer's head. So it was a weird situation there for sure, but I have a feeling like if there wasn't the pressure from the front office – and, you know, maybe had they not drafted Johnny Manziel, they had some other backup sitting there, Connor Shaw or whoever. And I don't know that they would have made that change at the time. And they would have just kept him in there. And we would have probably still seen the same of what we had seen. And that's just, you know, a guy that by all accounts, he seems like a good guy and he seems like he does everything you need to do. You work your butt off, and you're in the, you know, you're watching your tape, and you're doing your homework, and you're doing everything you need to do. But just when it comes down to the 60 minutes you play on Sunday,
yeah,
it's not all there, and it's you know, it's tough. It's tough if you're a fan of his, or it's certainly tough for him. But I, you know,
yeah, because I mean,
I'm just starting
to get
the feeling
that Hoyer expected this to happen this quickly.
No, absolutely not. And
I mean, no one did. I mean, Bill O'Brien was
right.
was pretty clear that was something he was not interested in doing until he
for several
had
weeks.
To.
Certainly not in the middle of the first game, you know. And
no way.
But then, as we watched Sunday, you know, he got pulled. Mallett came in, and granted, it was garbage time, and Kansas City pretty much had the game put away at that point.
Yeah, it was they dominated.
But still, Mallett seemed to make it just it. Everything felt more functional on offense.
Correct.
And once he came in the game, so
which is why I'm assuming that's why he's the starter for this week
I
two.
I would assume as much as well.
Another interesting thing about week one: all four teams in the AFC East, the New York Jets, the New England Patriots, the Miami Dolphins, and the Buffalo Bills, all 1-0 to start the season. Everybody with one win in the AFC East. And of those four teams, I'm definitely most impressed by the Buffalo Bills. We saw hints of this in the preseason, but you never can completely trust what your eyes see in the preseason because, you know, you're talking about second stringers, third stringers, no real game planning, things like that. But, you know, Tyrod Taylor, quarterback Tyrod Taylor for the Bills. He looks like the real deal. And that defense, that is one of the best, maybe the best defense in the NFL right now. You know, they didn't really get a lot of run game going with Shady McCoy, who's obviously not 100% yet after the hamstring injury, but they were getting a lot of production out of Booby Dixon and Williams, I believe his name is. Impressive stuff out of the Buffalo Bills. It's like one of those magic Rex Ryan moments where he goes in, a team buys into what he's selling. He goes in already with a strong defense, picks out of nowhere basically Tyrod Taylor to be the starter. This guy that, you know, we haven't seen except for being Joe Flacco's backup for the majority of his NFL career. They looked good.
Yeah, I mean, make no mistake. You said it a second ago. They had a strong defense. I mean, this was not a team that came out of nowhere with this defensive performance. This was Rex Ryan taking on a very talented group. And
yes, the Indianapolis Colts. You know, we're talking about Andrew Luck.
No. I meant taking the reins of the team.
I thought you meant taking on because they did.
I phrased that wrong. So he took this team that has a talented roster and has these guys there and he put his stamp on it.
Right.
And it's part attitude and part scheme. I mean, he's definitely a good defensive X's and O's coach. But that Buffalo team has lacked an attitude that he brings for a long time. And I think that's a big part of this. And the big question with them in my mind going into the season was, you know, obviously, you know, what's the quarterback situation? They had a couple different guys there, and they brought in Tyrod Taylor, it sounded like Tyrod Taylor was in the lead, but, like, nobody was, like, really believing that, I think, for a while.
Yeah, no, everybody was like, Tyrod Taylor's really good, so that's why Matt Cassel's going to get the starting job or whatever.
Right.
That's the kind of stuff people were saying.
Exactly. And I think
all summer long.
I think they even de facto listed Cassel as the starter, even though Tyrod Taylor, like, played the game. He was the quarterback, so... Maybe Cassel took the first snap. I don't know. I was reading something weird about it because I missed the beginning.
Didn't take
the
first snap in that game.
Regardless, the Bills, I'm buying it at this point. Obviously, we're 1 week into the season, and the last thing I want to do is overreact to anybody.
But this is also reflective of stuff that we've seen out of this team on offense and defense in the preseason, and it's staying pretty consistent.
Right, and like I said, the big question was, What's this offense going to look like? And they looked sharp.
Yeah.
And they don't need to look much more than sharp to
go
along
with a defense
with
like that.
That defense if they're going to be playing this well. I'm not ready to anoint them as the best defense in the league yet because I don't think anybody should get that title for a few more weeks. They're definitely in the conversation.
They're up there with Kansas
right
City and a couple of these other teams.
Sure.
Baltimore and Denver. I mean, Denver looked really impressive. I mean, they pressured Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco, like 65% of his dropbacks. That's unprecedented. That's pretty much unheard of, especially because we're talking about a Ravens offensive line that is good at pass protecting. Don't get me wrong.
They're not slubs.
Not at all. So I thought that was something that was really crazy. I mean, like, Joe Flacco gets pressured, but that is like a whole new degree of pressure. Something else that really stood out to me, you know, the battle of the rookie quarterbacks, and obviously it's never a quarterback versus a quarterback, so I'm not going to say that Marcus Mariota beat Jameis Winston, because what happened was the Tennessee Titans beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Unless they were playing tennis or something like that.
Sure, but you get a chance to compare and contrast these two rookie quarterbacks kind of side by side in that same game, and clearly Marcus Mariota, and he was given a situation that was a little bit more friendly to him in terms of the play calling. Mariota seems certainly more prepared right now than Jameis Winston to be a starter in the NFL. But the other thing that I want to just make note of is that for all the yards that he threw for, only 94 were actually air yards. Most of it was yards after the catch, which is exactly what you should do to make a rookie quarterback more comfortable. You should put him in situations where he can get the ball out quickly and he has guys who can create yards after the catch, because that builds a lot of confidence in a young quarterback.
I mean, I just want to say that, you know, I thought it was a great performance.
42-14 Tennessee, by the way.
Yeah, it was a great performance, but it was also, I mean, I thought, I mean, I don't even know how you say that Mariota is, or Mariota is, you know, you can tell from that game that he's more ready right now.
Well,
I can tell from that game that Tennessee is a better team than I thought they were. And
sure.
Tampa is way worse.
Yeah, but Jameis Winston threw a pick six on his first throw of the day, and Mariota
I get that. I'm just saying, like, I think Jameis had a tougher hand dealt to him in that game. And
sure.
And
he didn't have Mike Evans, of course.
I've
got
downgraded
that hamstring
my expectations
injury
for Tampa drastically for the season, just
yeah,
because, I mean, I had the game completely pegged wrong, just because I thought Mariota was in a tougher situation with less around him, but that's not what we saw at all. I mean, despite Tampa and these guys they've brought in, who, you know, it seems like they should be better.
Right.
And I mean, I know that they're getting restless in Tampa. They're already starting to talk about Lovie down there. So, and maybe that's a situation. I don't know if. You
don't ever
like
run the Tampa 2.
You feel that
in 2015.
Yeah, you feel like there's guys on that team, and they should be poised to take a step this year. Granted, you feel like Jameis should be the one holding that team back, and I felt like the team held him back on Sunday.
Sure, sure.
And certainly not the start he wanted. Mariota definitely looked better, but just, you know, keep in mind that, like you said, there was a lot of yards after the catch, and even with those, he still only threw for 209 yards and only had, what, 15 attempts? 13?
16 attempts.
16 attempts and 13 completions. So,
and only 94 air yards. 94 of those yards, only 94 of those yards were with the ball floating in the air. Most of it was yak.
There was definitely some good passing.
I'm not saying that's bad. That's good for a young quarterback.
No,
that's what he needs.
Absolutely. And it's not like I'm not saying he lucked his way into anything, because, no, he made nice throws. They were very sharp and on point, and he was hitting guys in stride, but it was. I think that game was more about how bad Tampa was than anything, and
because
that was
the
biggest surprise to me.
I still don't really expect that much out of the Buccaneers or
the Titans
this
for
year.
The season, yeah,
for the season.
I'm not ready to buy them as some darling.
So
for
me,
yet.
I don't think the Titans are going to be all that much really from a whole season perspective. So then you look at Tampa Bay losing 42-14, you kind of go, like, pencil Tampa in for that first pick in the draft right now. I mean, I know we're 1 week in, but yikes.
Man, yeah, it's going to be tough to turn that around.
Speaking of yikes, I didn't see this coming. San Francisco 20, Minnesota Vikings 3.
You know, it's funny. I had, when we did our picks last week, there was three or four games where I'm picking teams that were home underdogs, and there's a better what should be a better team coming in to play them, but I thought that they would stand up and give them a fight, because I thought the team maybe made a little bit of a step and they're gonna, you know, prove to these guys that they're better than they think they are.
Sure.
And all that stuff. I just picked the wrong teams, because I had Jacksonville and Oakland, and boy, that didn't work out.
No,
and
neither of them
and
worked
San
out
Francisco
at all.
Is set definitely one. I mean, Buffalo certainly sent that message. Because everybody, you know, was all over the Colts coming in from the preseason, and Buffalo said, don't forget about us.
Right.
San Francisco is, you know, they sent the message of, regardless of,
like, you all wrote us off and left us for dead, but guess what? We're still kicking.
And for good reason, just because I don't know that we've seen a tumultuous offseason like we did see for San Francisco since last year.
True. I mean, how could you expect a team to really weather all of that and then come out and open the season with a full on beating that they put onto the Vikings? I mean, there were a lot of things happening on the Vikings side of the ball that were really questionable like the lack of usage of Adrian Peterson. You know, the fact that they're not even just Peterson, but just in general, the Vikings are not running the ball. And you know,
and there was also some terrible calls in that game.
Oh, there was some that was definitely the worst officiated game of the week.
And that's the type of stuff that like that long touchdown that got that callback for. It was incomplete. They called it. The guy was all over him for 5 yards, halfway through the end zone until the ball got there. There was all kinds of contact. He never turned around. I mean, I don't know what pass interference is if that's not pass interference.
Right.
But regardless, that's the type of huge play that could completely change how the whole team is playing. You know
sure.
what I mean? And then they hadn't been able to get anything going, and then you do something like that, and then all of a sudden you got your lead, and you know because Minnesota wasn't playing terribly, but San Francisco was giving them a tougher time. But it wasn't until the second half where you kind of felt like Minnesota was just defeated already, even though they still had another
right.
half to play.
And
San Francisco, that was when they really started pounding on them.
And the thing that really baffled me, though, was the usage of Adrian Peterson because, okay, you know, Norv Turner, he's always been considered this kind of offensive guru. And, yeah, you know, the conventional wisdom in the NFL or in football in general says, well, when you're down – you're not running as much. You got to pass more. But the thing is that they weren't running the ball with Adrian Peterson when they were just down 7-0. I mean, that's one score.
Well, they came out of the gate with what, unless they do it differently there, or Norv does it differently.
Everybody scripts the first 15
everybody
plays.
Scripts the first plays. And the first series saw zero touches for Adrian Peterson. I don't understand how you, especially Teddy off of the year he had last year when they didn't have Adrian Peterson.
Especially the second half of his season was a lot better than the beginning.
Yeah.
And he looked more like Teddy from the beginning of last year.
Right.
In
and
this
that's,
game.
That's the thing is that you got he made all that progress last year, and then you bring him back. Now he's finally got this, you know, Hall of Fame type running back in the backfield and that he hadn't gotten to play with last year. And you're just not even going to use him. Like right out of the gate, you're not going to use him. I would have handed the ball to him twice in that first.
No, the first play of that game is a handoff to Adrian Peterson. Hello.
I don't care if it's San Francisco and you know they've had a run defense that's been good for a long time.
I mean, this is Adrian Peterson. He defies
it's Adrian Peterson.
That's like his bread and butter right there.
I feel like Norv might have overthought things.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to say is real quick is just. Teddy, there was times where he looked okay, and there was at least four or five throws that you just and maybe it might have been receivers just running the wrong way.
There were some situations where receivers were cutting off their routes, and I don't know what that is. I don't know what the miscommunication in the huddle is in that situation.
But there was ones where it looked like it could have been the receiver running wrong, and the ball just kind of landed in no man's land and just hit the turf. But there was other ones where it was clear overthrows on his part, and I don't know if it was just he was jittery. It was the first night. It was the last game after watching all the other games, and it was late, and it was West Coast, and you know all that together just produced his, you know, rough night basically. Out of sync. Yeah, there was just some crazy plays in there, just like made you scratch your head and just like what happened there. So. It definitely not the start they were looking for. Certainly not what I expected.
And finally, how about that crazy ending to the Giants at Cowboys game where Dallas came away with a 1-point 27-26 victory? Rashad Jennings saying this week that on that Giants drive that preceded the 42nd touchdown drive that led to the Cowboys victory said that he was told in the huddle, do not score on these plays. Even though Tom Coughlin, head coach of the Giants, has very often said, you always just take the points when the points are possible, regardless of what it says on the clock.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Do you take the if you have an opportunity to score a touchdown, you do everything you can in order to come away with six, if not seven,
I mean,
points.
My first thought on this is it's not like Rashad Jennings ran to the 1 yard and knelt. I mean,
true.
He was running into a pile of guys.
But he was also allegedly, I guess that would be allegedly intentionally running into a pile of guys instead of bouncing to the outside to get the touchdown.
Right. It's all hypothetical at this point. I'm just saying that, like, had Eli said, go for the score, I don't know that Rashad would have gotten
it. Necessarily gotten it, yeah.
I don't really necessarily have that big an issue with him saying that.
There's just a lot of game management problems at the end of that game for the Giants again.
Yeah, and the biggest issue for me was not the two runs that Rashad had. It was the pass that Eli threw after that.
Yeah.
Because there's three different things you could do. You could hand the ball off again and actually tell him to score this time, because now you've run the clock down.
Now you've run the clock down about 40 seconds.
So let's just try and get as many points as we can.
Sure.
And if we don't get in, then we'll kick a field goal. Or they decide to get cute and do this rollout or whatever, and you could take a sack, and then you're a little bit further back for your kick. But, oh, well, you've at least let the clock run more and more and more.
Yep.
And you're going to take that much time away from Tony Romo to try and win the game, and that makes everything harder. But, no, he flings it out of bounds. And I don't know if he was trying to – if it was just a brain fart, or if he – didn't want to take the sack.
Or he didn't entirely understand what was going on the clock or whatever.
I don't know what
it
happened.
Was bad.
That play was the
bad.
Worst part of the whole thing
yeah.
to me. I don't care if they were trying to get in or not with Rashad Jennings. So.
Well, that's all the big news about week one of the National Football League's 2015 season, which means we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. And when we come back, it's time for week two minute picks.
Yeah,
so
minute
stay
picks.
Tuned here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm a shade green. The only gun I need is the ace of spades. The ace of spades. Playing for the high road. Dancing with the devil. Going with the flow. It's all a game to me. And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. And it's time for our Minute Picks.
Minute Picks.
And for those of you who may or may not be familiar with this is the segment of our show where we go through every game in the upcoming week's schedule and make our picks, ideally within 60 seconds, but generally within 2 minutes. So take it as you will.
Yeah, it's like a loose guideline.
We keep ourselves on point because otherwise we might spend 10 minutes on a game and then all of a sudden we have a three-hour podcast. Nobody wants that, not even us. Let's start, of course,
or especially us,
with Thursday night football here at week two of the 2015 NFL season. Thursday night being tomorrow night, because this is Wednesday night when we record. Denver Broncos are at the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah,
everybody's talking about the decline of Peyton Manning, something that started allegedly last season. In my eyes, I think it's A, too early to say that he's done, and B, I think a lot of the issues that he has are related to the switch to Gary Kubiak's scheme, where he is passing under center rather out of the shotgun and all the transition that goes on with that. That being said, Manning looked a bit off last week. He was definitely harassed by the Baltimore Ravens pressure, and I think pressure is what's going to be coming at him in Arrowhead on Thursday night. Alex Smith was slinging that ball around last week. It was incredible. Got the tight end Kelsey out there who's finally come into his own. You got Jamal Charles, Jeremy Maclin, all of these new weapons for Alex Smith that he's really taking advantage of. I am going to go with the home team, the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to pick against the Chiefs here. Historically, Arrowhead's a terribly hard place to play, and I can imagine they're going to be fired up on a Thursday night, especially with the Broncos coming to town.
Divisional rivals.
It's Peyton. It's one of their key matchups, I'm sure. So I think that plus it's a short week. And Denver has to travel, and they don't. So, I'm liking the Chiefs there.
Moving on to the early games on Sunday, starting with the Houston Texans, who are at the Carolina Panthers. You got a lot of similarities, I think, on the offensive side of the ball with these two teams. Ryan Mallett, of course, a newly minted starter, and Cam Newton entrenched as the starter in Carolina. But you got a lot of questions as to weaponry and getting the ball and being able to run the ball, especially because you've got, the Houston front led by J.J. Watt. You've got a strong Carolina defense as well. I think it's going to be difficult for Ryan Mallett to step in and be a starter right away here with this quick promotion and then go up against, Carolina and kind of game plan for that. So I'm going to go with the Panthers here, but I don't expect a lot of scoring out of either team.
Yeah, this is a tough spot for Mallett in his first start, and that's, he's playing in Carolina. They're getting their first home game after a pretty good road win there, and certainly a good defensive performance. If there's anything we can pick here, I'd say it's the under. This should be a lot of defense in this game. We'll have to see if Keekly's back. I think he's still a question mark.
He's still in the concussion
now,
protocol, correct?
But I don't know how much that affects things because the rest of that Carolina defense is playing really well too with the guys in the D line and whatnot. So mainly, if this is like you said, they're kind of similar teams. If this were in Houston, I probably would pick Houston, but I'm going with Carolina.
San Francisco 49ers travel to Pittsburgh to Heinz Field to take on the Steelers. Last week, Bill Belichick said nobody does cover two against us because we have Gronkowski. Well, guess what? The Steelers went cover two, stubbornly enough, and guess who got open? Three touchdowns. Three of Tom Brady's four touchdowns went to Rob Gronkowski. Five of his catches, three times he was covered by guys who have no business covering him, and two times completely wide open. How about that? The Steelers don't seem like they are going to be turning away from that cover two anytime soon. Meanwhile, San Francisco defense looked really good, considering all the losses they had on that side of the ball. The offense looked pretty productive as well, and you know, you got Torrey Smith out there, you got Vernon Davis, you got guys who can really mess up this Steelers secondary. But at the same time, Steelers have a really good offense right now. D'Angelo Williams was humming last week against a typically stingy Patriots run defense. I'm reluctantly going with Steelers here. I'm going with the home team and getting a bounce back win, but I could see how the San Francisco 49ers could completely stun and harass them on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm a little less reluctant here than you. I think this is a situation. Pittsburgh's coming off an extremely tough game. Opener in New England, going against Brady and Gronk and all that stuff that
Edelman,
comes with that.
11 of 12 catches on 11 catches on 12 targets for
now
Edelman.
Now they're coming home and playing the San Francisco team, and San Francisco definitely looked a lot better than I expected on Monday night. But they get a short week and have to play an early game in the East Coast, and they do have their defense definitely looks stronger than I think we maybe a lot of people were giving them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's going to be enough for the Pittsburgh offense at home, trying to get things right. And now I don't see this working out for San Francisco.
Next up, Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans lost last week at the Arizona Cardinals, looking for some home field redemption. I think they get it. Jameis Winston clearly still a work in progress. I don't really have a lot of good things to say about that Tampa Bay defense. They got some strong guys up front, but the secondary is kind of an issue for me. If you're losing 42-14 to the Tennessee Titans, I don't see how you go into New Orleans and win. I'm going with the Saints.
Yeah, this sets up nicely for the Saints, I think. They didn't play terribly, I don't think, even though I don't know the scoreboard would show that. I thought that was a well-contested game until late. By New Orleans, and their defense looked pretty solid, I'd say, for a while in that game. And you know, they're going to get this Tampa team coming in, and it's like you said, it's hard to see anything going right for Tampa right now, especially based on what we saw last week at home against what should have been, or at least on paper, should have been one of their
easier opponents of the year,
and they just got pantsed. So. I think this should set up for New Orleans' first win, and you know, but you never know in the NFL. I'm going with New Orleans.
Next up, Detroit Lions at the Minnesota Vikings. If there's a time to free Adrian Peterson, it would be in this game because Adrian Peterson historically has destroyed the Detroit defense.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
Detroit's got a lot of good things going for them, but they also, of course, had a 21-3 lead over the San Diego Chargers last week and crapped it away, ending up losing the game and not scoring any more points other than that early 21. I'm a little nervous for all of those reasons because Detroit, it seems, capable of doing those Lions things. You're going to Minnesota. Adrian Peterson, you know, didn't have a lot of touches last week, but is historically very good against the Lions. So I am going to go with the Vikings. And I also think Teddy Bridgewater is going to look a lot better against a Detroit secondary that has historically also been kind of, you know, struggly.
Yeah, this should be an interesting game to watch. I think there'll be some fun stuff in there for everybody.
Oh, yeah, I think this will be an entertaining matchup.
The Lions, I said it to you on Sunday, the Lions have the ability to beat I'm not going to say any team in the league, but most teams in the league.
They can any given Sunday, for sure.
Yeah, but they have the ability to lose to almost any team in the league,
yep,
too. So, you know, so you never know what you're going to get with them. I do expect the Vikings to be to bounce back from that disappointing start. They do have a short week, but they're at home, and that sets up well for them. And like you said, Adrian Peterson against the Lions has been money for years. And if Norv, that's the only thing that makes me think that the Lions, you know, like I said, the Lions can potentially beat anybody or most teams in the league, and I think the Vikings are one of them. But they should. I don't think they should this Sunday. And but you never know when Norv's going to Norv out, and you know who knows. But I'll go with Vikings.
Arizona Cardinals at the Chicago Bears. Chicago's got some work to do, and it's something that we anticipated all summer long. You know, they're making that transition to a 3-4 defense, trying to figure out exactly what they have and what they can do with a guy like Jay Cutler. Alshon Jeffrey still kind of working his way back from little nagging injuries. I'm going to go with a road team here. I'm going to go with Arizona. I like their defense better. I like the offense better. I know it's, you know, they're traveling to the central time zone in an early game, but I think that, you know, home teams get that advantage, clearly, but Arizona just is just that much of a better team that I don't think that travel is going to be a problem. I'm going to go with the Cardinals.
I mean, Cardinals, I'd say it's hard to argue that they're the better team right now. They're more complete. They're playing better. They played better last year, all that. The Bears, honestly, the Bears, if you didn't watch the game, they hung in there for a lot longer than I expected them to.
Right, but they also did make a lot of the expected mistakes.
Exactly. It was just later in the game, so the fourth quarter.
Progress.
So, I guess I got to go with Arizona here, but I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be completely surprised if the Bears shocked them here, but mainly because I think that Arizona is still trying to get some things under them for the season.
And the offensive line, you know, maybe this is an opportunity for the Bears defense to do a little something with Pernell McPhee in the pass rush, given that Arizona's offensive line is still on the negative side of the ball.
Right, potentially. So, but you know, the Bears are still trying to adjust to so many new things too. That's somewhat of a tough order. For them, but you know they are at home. They could have a shot here. I'm gonna go with Arizona, but like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Chicago pulled the upset here.
Next matchup on the early slate of games on Sunday is a big one: New England Patriots at the Buffalo Bills. You know, we talked earlier in the show about what we saw out of Buffalo, you know, out of Tyrod Taylor, out of that defense. New England, of course, had a field day with a terrible Steelers defense. They're not going to be able to have such a field day against Buffalo. You know, Rex Ryan, he comes into Buffalo very familiar with the Patriots, having been the head coach of the Jets for several years, including how to deal with and corral Rob Gronkowski. I really like the Bills in this game. I'm going to go with Buffalo. I like that they're at home. I like the momentum they're on. I like the fire. I like the Rex Ryan factor. I don't think it's going to be an easy win, of course, because we're talking about Tom Brady and Gronk and so on, but I like Buffalo.
Yeah, I don't know if I really like them like that. I think this should be one of the – I'm thinking that this is going to be one of the better games of the weekend. These two teams know each other. These two coaches know each other, but it's never been like this. And with it being in Buffalo, I think that, you know, that really gives them a little bit of an edge here. You know,
there's gonna be some crowd noise, guys.
They're coming off of the confidence that they built from last week of beating this team that everybody was pegging to go to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And whatever. So, but it's one of those things where it's really tough to count out Bill Belichick, especially in a familiar situation, just because he's so good at preparing things for the next opponent and all that stuff. So I think it should be a very closely contested game. I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm going to go with the Bills, but, you know, I could see this one going either way.
Next, the San Diego Chargers are at the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm going to make this quick and easy. I'm going to go with the Bengals. The Bengals looked quite dominant against, you know, granted it's the Raiders, but they looked quite dominant going out west last week. San Diego now has to come east to the Eastern time zone in an early game. You know, I don't think that Cincinnati is going to score 21 points and then not score anymore like the Lions did last week. You got Tyler Eifert out there balling like they were hoping last year until he suffered that week one elbow injury. A lot of weapons, a lot of stuff to like on defense. I'm going to go Bengals.
Yeah, I think the Chargers are certainly a solid team. They got a lot of things going
for
them.
As they've been for the most part in the
sure.
Phil Rivers era.
Sure. And but yeah, it's like you said, the Cincinnati, you know, they've definitely been a solid team for the last 4 years now, 4 or 5 years now, and they've always looked, or in those years they've looked very complete. They didn't look any different last week. It's it, it in basically, the Bengals are one of the better teams in the league unless they're playing a nighter in the playoffs. So it's kind of hard to go against them at home. Against even though San Diego's a solid team, I you named it though. When Tyler Eifert is gonna,
he adds a really cool
really changes
new,
that offense. I think
yeah, it adds this whole new level that even when Jermaine Gresham was really going, it's not even
because Tyler Eifert's
Tyler Eifert's not afraid of contact. Tyler Eifert's gonna fight.
He's a more explosive,
very explosive
offensive player mm-hmm. but playmaker wise than Gresham ever was.
Yeah.
So
no, he adds a whole new dimension to that offense. Next, Tennessee Titans trying to continue the Mariota magic at the Cleveland Browns.
Who fell to
the New York Jets 31-10 last week. I like Cleveland here because I like the thought of Mike Pettine and Jim O'Neill's defense against a rookie quarterback like Mariota. This is the kind of defensive game plan that suits them really well, trying to confuse an inexperienced passer like Mariota. That being said, I am concerned about the Cleveland defense, particularly their ability to stop the run. It's something they focused on trying to improve this offseason. They gave up 141 yards rushing on average last year, 154 yards rushing to the Jets last week. And you got Bishop Sankey and Terrence West coming back to Cleveland to take on the Browns. That has me worried. The other thing, too, Johnny Manziel looks like he's probably going to be the quarterback. Josh McCown still in the concussion protocol after suffering a concussion on the team's first drive last week. And even if he is cleared by Friday, it looks like Manziel is getting prepared to be the starter. So that all of that makes me nervous. But I think that Cleveland at home, I think they can pull this out. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be tough. But I think Cleveland will get it.
Yeah, that's I knew you were going to take a whole minute on that.
There's a lot to talk about there.
This is definitely, in my mind, this is a classic bounce-back situation for Cleveland. They played about as bad as they could possibly play last week.
Yeah, 12 penalties, 109 yards, 5 turnovers, 3 of them resulted in touchdowns for the Jets. Just bad.
You got the stats. So it was bad.
It was bad.
And it was the type of thing where, you know, everybody shared in the loss. And
yeah.
So they get a Tennessee team who is everybody's darlings of the first week because, like we talked about earlier, Mariota looked pretty good, and nobody was expecting this, really. But this is going to be a tough test for them to go on the road to Cleveland to face, like you said, the run defense. You know, Danny Shelton can't fix the whole thing.
Right.
So they're still going to have some issues there, and Sankey looked pretty good last week. But that secondary is still pretty good. That's going to be I would not be surprised if we see Mariota get his first pick next week.
I would not be surprised either. Tashawn Gibson, everybody.
And I think that the Browns offense should do a little bit better at home in the familiar surroundings against what should be not quite as good a defensive front in Tennessee, because the Jets certainly have a pretty talented they're pretty talented up front on defense.
Yeah.
So I like the Browns here at home to bounce back.
Atlanta Falcons are at the New York Giants. Of course, New York Giants coming off of that one-point loss to the Cowboys that had so much controversy with the play calling at the end. Atlanta, their defense is taking a 180.
Looked
a lot different, a lot better with Dan Quinn as the head coach. The offense looked really great with Kyle Shanahan as the coordinator. I feel like the Giants are still in a stagnation mode right now. And I don't think being the home team is going to help them here. I do like Atlanta to win this game.
Yeah, this one, oh, man, I hear you. The Falcons D looks a lot better.
Yeah,
it
does.
They looked a lot better in one outing at home. And how are they going to do? This is an early game or
game? Yeah, we're not on the late games yet. I'll let you know.
Mm. I don't know. I could see this one going either way. Because you never really know what kind of Giants you're going to get. And if you get the good Giants,
anything's possible.
I could definitely see them pulling this game out. I am going to go with Atlanta. I think their passing game is certainly looking dynamic again.
The Giants have those issues in the secondary, particularly at safety.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's going to be the difference in the game. I am very intrigued to see if this Falcons D looks as good in a second week on the road against not the greatest opponent, but not the worst opponent by any stretch. Not that Philly was either of those, but it's just regardless, it's a whole different situation. Are they really this good, or are they really something that we should be buying into? And so I'm intrigued by that. regardless, I'll go reluctantly with the Falcons, I guess.
And the final game on the early slate for Sunday, St. Louis Rams at Washington. Washington kind of hung in there last week against Miami, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, I called that
one, at least. But I'm not particularly thrilled with what St. Louis is putting up on offense. I am, however, buying what they're putting up on defense, and I think that's going to make things really difficult. We're talking about a Washington offensive line that is not very good. We're talking about Kirk Cousins, the quarterback, who is just way overhyped. I don't see a lot of yards for Alfred Morris in this situation. I get it. It's a road game. But I think that St. Louis, just on the strength of that defense alone, is going to cause a lot of problems for Washington, and I don't think they're going to be able to handle it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also like not much of a home field advantage because Washington is not selling a lot of tickets. They're not populating that stadium with a lot of fans.
Well, as we've discussed that ad nauseum over the last several months, what kind of mess that Washington is right now. And, we saw that last week. They fought. They got talent on that team, and they fought, and they kept themselves in the game. Against a tough Miami squad, but they obviously fell short, and they have some issues, and when I say some, I mean quite a few. And St. Louis is basically the St. Louis that we saw last year, except both better on both offense and defense. They're definitely strong on offense. It's definitely strong on defense. Questions on offense,
mm-hmm.
But I think both of the defense has taken a step up, and the offense has incremented upward.
Well,
Nick
Foles is always better than a backup quarterback to Sam Bradford when Sam Bradford is hurt.
Basically, and I don't know if it's going to happen this Sunday, but they're going to get Todd Gurley back at some point. Their receivers are there. They're not crazy great, but they're guys, and they can get the job done. So, I'll go with the Rams here, I guess.
All right.
I think that defense probably a little too strong.
There are only three games in the late afternoon slate because, of course, that's how the NFL likes to roll early in the year. Please don't ask me why. First up, the Miami Dolphins at the Jacksonville Jaguars. See, I would want to pick the Jaguars here to have this bounce back this week. They're the home team, all of that. But what really bothers me is that they still have issues on the offensive line, and Miami's got Ndamukong Suh. And when you have Ndamukong Suh taking on a minus offensive line, you're going to have problems. It's going to be a problem. I think as we keep trying to say every year and failing, that I do think Jacksonville has taken a step forward, but is Blake Bortles a comparable quarterback to Ryan Tannehill? No. Are his receivers comparable to what Ryan Tannehill is working with right now? Tight ends? No. Is the defense comparable? No. Is the O-line comparable? No. So I'm going to go with the road team going with Miami. It's not like they're traveling that far anyway.
Yeah, it's not necessarily like the...
It's not as road as it could be.
They're not
going across the country.
It's not the worst travel they could have. Yeah, and it's going into that house and where there's a pool and stuff like that. And
The pool's kind of nice.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
You got to improve the fan experience if the team is struggling to win games.
Right, and that's kind of what it is there. It's
I like that.
It's kind of like this party place, and it's not like it's this fearful place that you have to go as a player. You know what I mean? So I think you're right. I think that Miami is probably the better team in just about all phases. Unless Ndamukong, like, decides to kick Blake Bortles' teeth in or something like that,
But you can't put it past him.
You can't put it past him.
We already got a stomp from him last week on Alfred Morris. So.
Yeah, it was something else. But Miami, I mean, I've downgraded my expectations for this Jaguars team a lot after last week. So, I agree with you. It's mainly to do with the offensive line still has holes, and I think it's starting to get to Blake Bortles now. Like, I think when he first started playing last year,
it's hard for it to not get to
you. He was fearless and all that, but yeah, after you've been on the ground so many times, it starts to get to you. So,
yeah.
Until they can, until they can get that a little bit better, I think it's going to continue to be rough for him. So I'll go with Miami here, though. I'm hoping the Jaguars do take that step just so they get to where I've expected them to be.
All right, this next game is going to make it four straight picks for road teams for me. Baltimore Ravens at the Oakland Raiders. You look at what the Cincinnati Bengals did going into Oakland last week. The Ravens don't have a comparable offense in terms of weaponry, and things like that. But they definitely have a better defense right now. than the Bengals. The Bengals have a very good defense. That can't be denied. I think it's just going to be really difficult for the Raiders to just get any yards in this game against Baltimore's defense. So I'm not entirely concerned about what may or may not happen with Joe Flacco and his group of weaponry. And I think Justin Forsett could have a really nice game here. So I'm going with another road team, homie. I'm going with Baltimore.
Well, it's funny we go Jacksonville to Oakland because those are the two those were my two like sleeper surprises last week that both disappointed me.
I've been looking forward to improvements for both teams for years.
Oakland more so disappointed than Jacksonville, I would say, but at the same time I wasn't expecting, you know, Derek Carr to get injured and McGloin to be in for most of the game.
It looks like Carr's gonna be good to go though. It's just a bruise on his thumb.
He's supposedly good to go, but it's also is his throwing thumb, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm saying.
Well, he's proven that he can grip and throw a football. Right. And that's all they needed to see. So.
At the same time, in a game, something happens. Maybe he gets aggravated. You know, it's hard to say. And I think, you know, without him healthy, they. I don't know for how long, but Charles Woodson got hurt too, right?
Yeah, Charles Woodson's hurt too.
Dislocated his shoulder, and he was one of the reasons why I was kind of high on them as far as what they did in the offseason. So
ageless.
Yeah, so I think the Raiders resurrection project is slightly behind schedule here, and facing Baltimore Ravens in the second week is not going to do anything to help that.
And the final late game on Sunday, Dallas Cowboys at the Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, this is a Dallas Cowboys team that is not going to have Dez Bryant for at least 6, 8, or maybe even more weeks because he has that broken foot. I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Eagles here. I think that the quickness of that offense, especially when they're going to be on their home field against this divisional rival, I think that that's going to really come through. I like Philadelphia's defense. We saw shades of it come up against the Falcons, even though the Falcons ended up getting that win. So I'm gonna go with the. Yeah, I can't go road team this whole time, and I think this is a good situation with Dallas. You know, dealing with Dez Bryant's injury, with dealing with all the chatter that went into the end of last week's game, and all of that being kind of a little distraction. I'm gonna go with the Eagles.
Yeah, I think Chip and the Eagles got caught a little off guard last Monday. But that was another one of those things where, you know, the Eagles were the story, and then they went in and went to Atlanta to open the season, and Atlanta was just like, hey, don't forget about us, you know.
Right.
What I mean? So Philly gets to go home. I'm expecting them to bounce back a little bit. I liked a lot of what I saw out of Philly's defense last week.
I agree.
Even against what looked like a revived Atlanta offense, nothing too scary in the running game, but their pass game certainly was on fire on Monday. But even that being said, the Eagles defense I thought looked pretty good in a lot of times, except for Byron Maxwell had a rough night. So then you look at Dallas coming off of a game that they probably should have lost. So they squeaked that one out. They lost Dez. You know, they're gonna have to deal with the Eagles at home and, you know, ready to, you know, like I said, bounce back and
prove something in the division and all of that.
Yeah, and it's divisional and all that stuff. So I'd expect the Eagles to take this one. But, you know, it's NFC East, you never know.
Interesting matchup. Sunday Night Football, Seattle Seahawks at the Green Bay Packers. A couple months ago, I might be just like road team Seahawks all the way. But at this point, you look at the defense that is clearly missing safety Cam Chancellor. I know that's the overarching narrative right now, but I believe that to be the case, and that offensive line very shaky. You know, you lose your center in that trade for Jimmy Graham, and you kind of lose a lot. I'm going to go with Green Bay here. I think that Seattle's going to do some good things here. I think Marshawn Lynch is going to have a really good day. I think that Jimmy Graham is going to get open a couple of times. But I do worry about that offensive line. I do worry about that defense, especially when you're talking about Aaron Rodgers and the rebirth of the returned James Jones in a secondary that really could use Cam Chancellor's help right now. This game's in Green Bay. It's on Sunday night. It's going to be a tough one. I think it could be a close one. I think it could be high scoring. I think it could be low scoring. I think that there's a lot of opportunities here for both teams to make an impact. But I think ultimately scales tip towards Green Bay.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I had to bring up all those points about the O-line.
You made a lot of good points, and it's hard to argue with a lot of those points. The only thing that makes me want to or have any inkling of saying Seattle here is the fact that I can't believe that they're going to start the season 0-2. And but it's also tough to start.
But you never know.
It's also tough to start your season with two games on the road, and especially with the second one being in Green Bay, home of
perennial Super Bowl favorite,
perennial Super Bowl or at least Super Bowl contender, if you will.
And Aaron Rodgers, I mean, the best quarterback in the league.
These two teams are, you know, for the last 3-4 years have been right there at the top of this conference. There's no reason to expect them to not be at the top of the conference again at the end of the season, even if they do, even if Seattle does start 0-2 here.
You can start 0-2 and win a Super
but
Bowl.
I just, I, you know, all other issues aside, I just don't see Seattle going into Green Bay and beating Aaron Rodgers on a Sunday night in this situation. I think this is a Green Bay win, although it should be a fantastic game to watch.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I know Night of Champions is going to be happening, WWE Night of Champions, but I'm going to be probably paying more attention to this game for the most part than Night of Champions.
Multiple TVs, people.
Multiple TVs, everybody.
If you don't have it, you need it.
Yeah. There are enough cheap TVs out there, you can get a second, no problem. And finally, Monday Night Football. The New York Jets are at the Indianapolis Colts. Indianapolis Colts looking to bounce back from what happened to them in Buffalo last week, and I think that they pull it off. You know, the New York Jets, they got a tough defense too, but I wouldn't say that it's comparable to what the Bills are putting out there right now. Also, I don't look at Ryan Fitzpatrick and see Tyrod Taylor. I don't look at Ryan Fitzpatrick's weapons. I mean, there's Brandon Marshall, sure, but I don't see him being able to work with a lot of other guys in the way that the Bills can kind of spread the ball around. The Colts got some issues, you know, what's going on with Frank Gore, the O-line, the defense. There are problems, but this is the Colts at home on Monday Night Football with the Jets coming to town. Are you kidding me? How am I going to pick the visiting Jets over the Colts on Monday Night Football? Colts!
Yeah, I mean, this is...
Go Colts.
This is, you know, typical. Anybody who wants to pick the Jets here, you know, I just think it's a typical overreaction after 1 week of play.
Sure.
The Colts certainly didn't look themselves or didn't look what people expected mm-hmm. on Sunday. And the Jets played better than I think people expected. But it was a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Like I said earlier, I think Cleveland had just an off day as a team. I think that
which is totally possible.
And so the Jets might have looked a little bit better. They do have a strong defense.
They do
have Chris Ivory's a solid running back.
He is.
Brandon Marshall's a fantastic receiver.
Very physical. But, I mean, he's going to be stacked up against Vontae Davis, who is at least physical as compared to Joe Hayden, who can play really well but needs help against big physical receivers.
Yeah, and so this is a classic, in my mind, classic Colts bounce back. They need to get on the right path, and they get a Monday night game in the spotlight to do it. And I mean, if they lose to the Jets here, this is gonna be bad. It's gonna be a lot worse for the Colts, or some real bad news, we'll say. But I think they find a way to get it done at home under the lights.
And those are our week two picks here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. And like we say every time we do these, do with them what you will.
I'll recommend burning them.
Burn them.
Especially after, you know, some of the picks I had last week.
Oh, yeah, I went 8-8 last week, so I'm not proud. I think this week I'll do a little bit better, though. I am worried about those four straight road teams that I picked there.
I did call that Rams upset.
You did call the Rams upset. That is true.
I'll hang that on my hat and
that
forget about
true.
The rest.
So that wraps up our minute picks for week two. So we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and we'll come back to send y'all home. So just stay tuned. A couple more minutes.
You know I'm going to lose. The gambling's for fools. But that's the way I like it, baby. I don't want to live forever. And don't forget the Joker.
Well, that about does it for this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast. As always, I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns at BleacherReport.com. Cover the Browns, their salary cap, and the AFC North for CLE.Scout.com. That's the Orange and Brown Report at Scout.com. And the entire National Football League for SportsOnEarth.com and the SportsDaily.com. You can find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea, FBALL_Andrea.
And again, I'm Brian. I'm the co-host of this podcast as well as the producer. And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
So I'd like to thank all of you for joining us here at the F-Ball NFL podcast this week. As always, we appreciate every listen and every listener we get, whether you're downloading, subscribing, streaming or otherwise. And whether this is your first time or your 100th time listening to us, we appreciate each and every one of you. It's week two in the National Football League. So we got 16 games going starting Thursday night through Monday night. So
enjoy
them all, as many of them that you can get into your brain hole. And we'll be back, of course, next Wednesday to recap all of the wonderful things and perhaps not so wonderful things that happen in week two of the 2015 NFL season. And of course, preview week three. So be sure to stay tuned for next week here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Later.
Peace.